Today is Wednesday, August the 28th, 2024. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how big tech companies and our government are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a 3-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at pcradioshow.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live. That's PRN.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on PRN.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your questions or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. The First Amendment of the United States Constitution protects the right to free speech. Mark Zuckerberg says he regrets bowing to what he calls pressure from the Biden administration to censor content on Facebook and Instagram during the coronavirus pandemic. In a letter sent to the United States House Committee Chair, he said some material, including humor and satire, was taken down in 2021 under pressure from senior officials. The White House has defended his action, saying it encouraged responsible actions to protect public health and safety. Mark Zuckerberg also said his firm briefly demoted content relating to Joe Biden's son, Hunter, ahead of the 2020 election, after the FBI warned of a potential Russian disinformation operation. It later became clear that this content was not part of such an operation. Mark Zuckerberg said that it should not have been temporarily taken down. Mark Zuckerberg did not give further detail about the actions he regretted during the pandemic. At that time, his business removed posts for a variety of reasons. Mark Zuckerberg said the decisions made were the decisions of his business, but that the government pressure was wrong. We made some choices that, with the benefit of hindsight and new information, we wouldn't make today. Mark Zuckerberg said he and Meta would be ready to push back if something similar happened in the future. His letter was addressed to Jim Jordan, the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, which has been investigating content moderation on online platforms. Republicans said the letter was a big win for free speech. In a statement issued to the website Politico, the White House stood by its actions. It said, "Our position has been clear and consistent. We believe tech companies and other private actors should take into account the effects their actions have on the American people while making independent choices about the information they present." Mark Zuckerberg's comment on Hunter Biden referred to the story of a laptop that was abandoned by the president's son at a repair shop in Delaware, as first reported by the New York Post. The newspaper claimed emails found on the computer suggested his business abroad had influenced U.S. foreign policy while his father was vice president. The president and his family have denied any wrongdoings. Mark Zuckerberg said the story was temporarily demoted on his platforms while going through a fact check after a warning from the FBI of a potential Russian disinformation operation. "And in retrospect, we shouldn't have demoted the story," Mark Zuckerberg wrote. "We've changed our policies and processes to make sure this doesn't happen again." The Personal Computer Show advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. The First Amendment of the United States Constitution protects the right to free speech, which includes the expression of opinions and ideas, even if they are false or misleading. This protection extends to various forms of speech, including misinformation and disinformation, as long as it does not fall into specific categories that are not protected, such as incitement to violence or true threats. The First Amendment generally allows individuals to express their views, even if those views are based on misinformation or disinformation. This principle is rooted in the belief that a free exchange of ideas, including false ones, is essential for a healthy democracy. The rationale is that through debate and discussion, the truth can emerge from the marketplace of ideas. When governments determine what is information and disinformation, it can lead to censorship, erosion of trust, public health risk, challenges to free speech, and manipulation of political dynamics. These consequences highlighted the need for careful consideration and transparency in how misinformation and disinformation is addressed in society. Misinformation and disinformation are terms often used interchangeably, but they have distinct meanings that are important to understand. Misinformation refers to false or inaccurate information that is spread without the intent to deceive. Disinformation, on the other hand, is false information that is deliberately intended to mislead. Misinformation is unintentional, while disinformation is intentional. Both can have significant negative effects on society, including undermining public trust and influencing political outcomes. However, disinformation is often more harmful due to its deliberate nature. Understanding these distinctions is crucial, especially in today's digital age where both types of information can spread rapidly through social media and other platforms. Microsoft halts its aggressive Windows 11 ads in Windows 10. Windows 10 users have pushed back against intrusive pop-ups that get them to upgrade to Windows 11, and Microsoft is finally back down. With just a year and a few months to go before Windows 10 reaches its end of support date, Microsoft's strategy to implore Windows 10 users to move up to Windows 11 has been pretty poorly executed. Windows 10 users have been struck by annoying ad campaigns that are invasive and oftentimes take up the full screen or pop up incessantly. However, Microsoft has vowed to back off due to the backlash it received from users regarding a full-screen pop-up urging folks on Windows 10 to upgrade to Windows 11. As the not-so-good news is that this change, of course, from Microsoft won't benefit most of you out there, namely those using Windows 10 Home. As Windows Latest, the publication reports, Microsoft has made the decision that to honor our users' feedback, these invitations will no longer begin with the April 2024 monthly security update. We will share a new timeline in the coming months. The catch, as Windows Latest, the publication reports, made clear, the pop-up will still appear for Windows 10 Home users. But those of you running Windows 10 Pro won't see it anymore, neither will business users. Of course, we can still celebrate this as a definite step in the right direction, and we can be hopeful that maybe, just maybe, it'll come to Windows 10 Home before too long, especially if Microsoft gets more feedback on this annoying pop-up from everyone out there. That said, it's also not clear if Microsoft is giving up entirely on this approach for non-home users, or if the company is just planning a more low-key way of prompting those users to upgrade without getting a lot of flack. Windows 11 has received a bigger share of the market recently, with more people swapping over to the new operating system. So it seems somewhat pointless for Microsoft to harp on the topic, especially with the end-of-life date basically ever-present in many people's minds. People are still reluctant to move over to Windows 11 for a number of reasons, including persistent bugs and flawed update layouts and glitchy start menus and strict system requirements. Users may also be reluctant to embrace Windows Copilot and the other AI features that have been popping up on Windows 11. In all honesty, these massive pop-ups have probably driven more people away from Windows 11 than towards it. Similar to the way a lot of people feel rather turned off by the Edge pop-ups when you use the browser to download alternatives like Google Chrome or Opera GX. We can only hope for Microsoft's sake that the company takes this licking as a lesson and avoids making the situation worse. And as noted, bring the cessation of the full-screen upgrade nag to Windows 10 home users as well. And the main reason why there is reticence of Windows 10 home users converting to Windows 11 is that most of the systems are not qualified for the upgrade, and they have more than a year left before they have to make a changeover, which probably means buying a new system. And if that's the case, in this economy, they'll wait a year. Google DeepMind workers protest over U.S. military and defense contracts. Google workers worried about their artificial intelligence being used in warfare. The workers argue such involvement violates Google's own artificial intelligence principles, which state the company will not pursue AI applications that cause overall harm or contribute to weaponry and surveillance. Although the letter refrains from mentioning any specific geopolitical conflict, it links to reports alleging that Israeli military operations are using AI for surveillance and targeting. Although DeepMind has historically maintained a policy against using its technology for military purposes, the business has become increasingly close to Google's broader operations since its acquisition in 2014, leading to closer ties to military contracts. Despite the letter's demands, including a review of DeepMind's technology being used by military clients and the establishment of a new governance body, Google has not taken any decisive action. One of the letter's signatories expressed their dissatisfaction with Google's response to the complaint, stating that the company's statement on Project Nimbus is so specifically unspecific that we are all none the wiser on what it actually means. The letter, dated May the 16th, says the undersigned are concerned about Google's contracts with military organizations, citing articles about the tech giant's contracts to supply AI and cloud computing services to the Israeli military. The letter adds, any involvement with military and weapon manufacturing impacts our position as leaders in ethical and responsible AI and go against our mission statement and stated AI principles. While a relatively small portion of the organization's overall staff, the memo hints at a culture clash between Google and DeepMind, which Google acquired in 2014 and whose tech Google pledged in 2018 would never be used for military or surveillance purposes. Nearly 200 workers at Google DeepMind, the company's AI research division, have signed a letter urging the company to terminate its contract with military organizations. The May 16th letter highlights growing concern within the organization about the ethical implications of its AI technology being used for digital warfare. The signatories represent around 5% of DeepMind's workforce, calling out the company's contracts to supply AI and cloud computing services to various governments, including the Israeli military, under Project Nimbus. Google workers worried about the AI being used in warfare. Despite the letter's demands, including a review of DeepMind's technology being used by military clients and the establishment of a new governance body, Google has not taken any decisive action. Are there big tech companies without military contracts? As of now, Facebook, also known as Meta, Apple, and Twitter are notable big tech companies that have largely avoided major military and law enforcement contracts. This stance has been influenced by employee activism and public pressure against such collaborations. While many tech companies, including Google, Amazon, and Microsoft, have engaged in various military contracts, the aforementioned companies have managed to maintain a distance from significant military involvement. This has been a strategic choice, possibly to retain customer trust and avoid backlash from employees and the public. If you're looking for a big tech company to work for and do not have military contracts, Facebook, Apple, and Twitter stand out as primary examples. Approximately 10% of engineering jobs in the United States are related to government military contracts. This figure reflects the significant role that defense and aerospace sectors play in the engineering job market, particularly in areas where the contractors are concentrated, such as California, Texas, and around Washington, D.C. Former Google CEO blames remote work for company struggles. Billionaire Eric Schmidt had choice words for Google policies on work-life balance. Former Google CEO Eric Schmidt has a complaint about his old company, and it's one that employees across America are increasingly hearing from executives. Workers aren't coming into the office enough. The former billionaire investor, who led Google from 2001 to 2011 and remained on as its executive chairman until 2015, made his feelings on remote work clear before a class at Stanford. It was brought up that Google's breakthrough, artificial intelligence discovery from 2017, the creation of the Transformer. The technology helps power much of the AI research behind today's products. It's the T in ChatGPT. Despite that early lead, the Mountain View tech giant has fallen behind in AI development. Schmidt, after noting that he's no longer an employee of the company, got on his soapbox. Google decided that work-life balance and going home early and working from home was more important than winning, he said, prompting titters from the crowd. And the startups, the reason startups work is that people work like hell. I'm sorry to be so blunt, Schmidt continued, but the fact of the matter is if you all leave the university and go found a company, you're not going to let people work from home and only come in one day a week if you want to compete against the other startups. It's worth noting that one day a week is an exaggeration on Schmidt's part. Google required workers to come into the office 3 days a week back in 2022. Schmidt then said that there's a history in tech of dominant companies missing out on the next wave of the industry, and he played up the importance of crazy ideas at hard-charging founders like Elon Musk. He also praised Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company and said that the massive chipmaker has a rule that new PhD hires have to work in the factory, on the basement floor. Now, can you imagine getting American physicists to do that? Schmidt asked. The PhDs? Highly unlikely. Different work ethic. More than 8 in 10 recruiters say they post ghost jobs. Looking for work is a struggle, and headhunters are making it even harder. More than 8 in 10 recruiters say they post ghost jobs. About 81% of recruiters say their employer posts ghost jobs or positions that either don't exist or are already filled, according to a new report from My Perfect Resume, a resume-building platform. Jasmine Escalera, a career expert for My Perfect Resume, says this figure is staggering and discouraging for candidates looking to land a new role. She says, "We often hear job seekers saying, 'I'm tired, I'm depressed, I'm desperate,' using these very harsh words when it comes to the job market. Not only are recruiters fessing up to the tactic, they're also admitting to how common it is. Around 17% say up to 3/4 of their job announcements aren't genuine, while 21.5% say ghost jobs account for half of all positions they post. 36% say 1/4 of their postings are fake or are already filled, and 18% of headhunters reports that less than 1/10 of their work advertisements aren't real. It may seem counterproductive for recruiters to advertise ghost jobs, theoretically wasting their own time as well as that of applicants, but there are incentives for doing so. About 38% say they post fake positions to maintain a presence on job boards when they aren't hiring. 36% do so to assess the effectiveness of their job descriptions. 26% want to build a talent pool for the future. 26% hope to gain insight into the job market and competitors. And 25% want to assess how difficult it would be to replace certain employees, according to the report. Escalera points out that a big reason for posting these jobs is recruiters wanting to improve their business image. Nearly a quarter also say that fake jobs help their companies look as if they aren't experiencing a hiring freeze. And one-fifth say they post ghost jobs to improve the reputation of their company. Companies are trying to project, we're okay, we're still maintaining hiring, and we're still moving in a growth-oriented trend. In this market, our organization is doing well. That ties into why these fake jobs might be appearing more from a comforting perspective, she says. It really is about the business, the bottom line, showing growth, showing trends, and how that connect to maintaining profit. Ghost jobs have become so ubiquitous, Escalera said that rather than hope for a cultural change, job applicants should adapt to the new normal. She recommends candidates equip themselves to recognize fake postings and avoid applying to those positions. If there's something that seems irregular about the posting, for example, the responsibilities and the titles don't match, or the pay range is incredibly astronomically broad, this could be a fake job posting. You want to also scrutinize job postings from the perspective of, does the job posting even really make sense? Escalera adds that job platforms like Glassdoor, where employees can post reviews about employers anonymously, have equipped employees to speak up when they think a company is being deceitful without threat of repercussion. She thinks the site should also be leveraged to warn others of ghost posting. The empowered job seeker isn't just empowering themselves through the use of technology to boost their brand, she says. The empowered job seeker is also putting out information that is supporting other job seekers in a very powerful way, and that includes reviewing companies and talking about what is working and what's not working with certain companies. Microsoft's revised Recall AI feature will roll out to beta testers in October. Windows Insider, using Copilot Plus PCs, will be able to try a more secure version of the AI timeline. Microsoft's Windows Recall feature, which stores a timeline of activity snapshots on your PC, has a new release date for Windows Insiders. Microsoft unveiled the feature to much fanfare in May, only to delay it indefinitely after blowback from security researchers a few weeks later. After taking time to recalibrate, the company said last week it will roll out Recall to beta testers using Copilot Plus PCs in October. Windows Recall stores snapshots of everything you do on your PC, designed as a photographic memory for your PC activity. It lets you revisit things like products, emails, documents, or chats shown on your screen. The features perks are easy to see, especially for those who spend long hours on their PC or those with foggy memories. But if that also sounds like a privacy nightmare, security researchers thought so too. Despite safety assurances from Microsoft during its announcement at Build 2024, cybersecurity and privacy experts sounded the alarm. The fundamental problem was that intruders wouldn't only get goodies from your traditional file system if they access your PC. In addition, they could see anything you've done on your computer from the moment you activated Recall to the present. That's because Microsoft, for reasons we can't quite comprehend, other than put AI in all the things as quickly as possible, left Recall's data unencrypted. Security expert Kevin Beaumont detailed that Recall didn't hide sensitive information like passwords or banking details. Sure, your timeline was theoretically safe as long as nobody could access your PC. But if you accidentally installed malware or let an intruder in through other means, they would find a motherload of sensitive, unencrypted data. In response to the blowback, Microsoft added some common sense security features that left us wondering why they weren't there in the first place. Again, it's hard to decipher the company's motives for that omission when the feature was announced, other than speculating that it wanted to prioritize a seamless user experience over tight security. These security changes include making the feature opt-in instead of enabled by default when setting up a Copilot Plus PC. In addition, Microsoft said the feature would require Windows Hello, a face or fingerprint scan, and deploy just-in-time decryption only unlocked through Hello. That means if a hacker gains access to your computer, your screenshot timeline should remain encrypted unless you lend your face or finger to unlock it, or they somehow figure a way around Hello's encryption. Microsoft says it will publish a new blog post when the feature is available in October through the Windows 11 Insider program. The feature will require Copilot Plus PC, the first of which launched in June, with a compatible chip. That chip list includes Qualcomm Snapdragon X Plus and Snapdragon X Elite, although Intel may have its first Copilot Plus chips out in the wild when the feature finally arrives in preview. Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where I talk about computers, the workplace, and a lot of the terminology that you may not understand or even hear about. There is this item that we talk about throughout the IT world, and that is tech debt. What is tech debt? Tech debt is this idea that there are very exciting things that the IT department is working on. We've got all kinds of different ideas about how to make the company better, and we keep chasing after these sparkly new concepts. We've got a lot of different companies across the country and around the world that are chasing after ideas of artificial intelligence and installing that, and that will somehow make everything beautiful, wonderful, and money will just rain down from the skies for our company. The reality is, along the way, we forget about some of those older things. We forget about the old hardware that's sitting around, these different computers, these laptops that are 5, 7 years old, the desktops that are 7 or even 10 years old. We forget about the things that are actually already in place, and everybody goes, well, it works for now, and they don't realize all of the additional features that can come from new versions of the application, or maybe even shifting off of the old application into something new that will do the same thing that what we're doing, but it will be supported. And it may come with new features and new ability, but it's working. So why should we throw money in that direction? Why should we even bother with that? And then there's all of these different things along the way that we've band-aided solutions in. We've gone through. IT has been presented with a problem that's got to be fixed right now. We have to have this information. We have to do this report. We have to do whatever it is that we have to do. And that Band-Aid sits there for years. I worked at a company a number of years ago. I worked at this company, and this was in the mid-2010s and early 2010s. It was about, I'll call it 2011. And we're sitting there, and we're running our ERP software. And it was hard to call it an ERP software, but that's what we used. It was how we routed everything through the factory, how we managed all of our accounts payable, accounts receivable, everything. It really was an ERP software, but it was on DOS. The last update that we had from it was from 1998. Okay, 1998. I want you to think about the computing power, the computers that we had in 1998. The technology was old. It was backwards. It was like trying to run a company. Let me rephrase this. It's kind of like running an old car that's run down, and it works. It gets you from point A to point B, but it's not comfortable anymore. It's burning oil. It's not fuel efficient. It doesn't have, the AC isn't really working, but you only need to worry about that once in a while. And all of this just starts building up. All of this tech debt, everything where we have stopped chasing after improving, and we've moved to simply maintaining it until it drops dead. That is tech debt. I'm going to tell you that this exists all around us. Every IT organization has dealt with this and is probably, almost all of them are still dealing with it, because everything is just, everybody gets set in their ways. Well, I paid $7,000 for this ERP software in 1998, and I want to get every bit, every penny I can out of this system. Yeah, okay, I understand that the new ERP software that we're going to have to bring in is going to be, yes, it's going to be expensive. It's not going to be a $7,000, $10,000, $50,000 solution. It's going to take us bringing all of that data that we have, and we have to bring that all on over. We have to make that sales pitch of bringing all of that data over, which is also going to count for many, many hours of work. And we have to pay for this new ERP software. Back in 1998, ERP was, well, it existed, but it wasn't exciting. It didn't give us any of the reports that we wanted. We didn't have the speed that we wanted. And all of these different things just start mounting up. And people get complacent. I will tell you, your best thing to do as part of any organization is to encourage abandoning anything that is old, anything that is archaic, anything that you sit there and you go, why are we still running this software when we've got all of these different options available that will drive us that much further forward? And this takes a sea shift, a paradigm shift in the thinking of everybody to go forward and to remove all of the archaic things that are holding us back just because it was comfortable 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And we need to think about what are the new abilities that we can bring to the company, to bring to our job, our position, our department, that will make us better, faster, more profitable, more efficient. And we need to sell that. And we need to do that on a regular basis. Don't get comfortable. Look for new and exciting stuff to make your company far more successful. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. College graduates with an engineering degree. Globally, approximately 10% to 15% of college graduates each year earn a degree in engineering. In countries with strong industrial bases or significant investment in technology and infrastructure, such as China and India, the percentage of engineering graduates can be higher. For instance, engineering degrees often represent a substantial portion of graduates in these nations due to their focus on developing technical skills. Trend indicates a growing emphasis on STEM education worldwide, and many countries aiming to increase the number of graduates in engineering and related fields to meet the demands of the modern economy. Each year, approximately 5% to 7% of all college graduates in the United States earn a degree in engineering. This percentage reflects the total number of engineering graduates compared to the overall number of college graduates across all disciplines. In the United States, approximately 200,000 to 300,000 students graduate with engineering degrees each year. The number of engineering graduates each year includes a significant portion of foreign students, while specific numbers can vary annually. Recent data provides a clearer picture of the trends. Foreign students constitute a substantial percentage of engineering graduates in the United States. In certain engineering disciplines, international students make up a significant portion of the graduate population. Specifically, 82% of full-time graduate students in petroleum engineering and 74% in electrical engineering are international students. This trend highlights the critical work that foreign students play in the engineering workforce and education system in the United States. The presence of foreign students in U.S. engineering programs is not only significant, but essential for maintaining the quality and quantity of graduates in this field. Their contributions help fill the talent gap in various engineering sectors, underscoring the importance of international education in the United States engineering landscape. Approximately 16% to 20% of engineering graduates pursue advanced degrees such as a master or doctorate. This percentage reflects the growing trend among engineering graduates to further their education for various reasons, including career advancement, specialization, and research opportunities. While a significant portion of engineering graduates enter the workforce with a bachelor's degree, a notable percentage choose to further their education through master or doctoral programs. The distribution of engineering graduates varies significantly across different disciplines. Civil engineering is one of the most popular engineering disciplines, with approximately 12,000 to 21,000 graduates each year in the United States, making it a significant portion of the overall engineering graduate pool. Computer engineering also sees a high number of graduates, with over 18,000 new graduates annually, reflecting the growing demand for technology-related skills. Mechanical engineering is traditionally one of the largest, with a substantial number of graduates, although specific numbers can vary year by year. Electrical engineering is similar to mechanical engineering. This field consistently produces a large number of graduates, often in the range of 15,000 to 20,000 annually. Aerospace engineering is a smaller field, though, with around 3,500 graduates each year, representing about 4% of the total engineering degrees awarded. Chemical engineering typically sees around 10,000 to 15,000 graduates annually. While civil and computer engineering lead in graduate numbers, other disciplines like mechanical and electrical engineering also contribute to the overall engineering workforce. The average salary for engineers in the United States is approximately $79,590 per year. This figure can vary significantly based on the specific engineering discipline, location, and level of experience. Engineering salaries typically range from about $55,329 to $267,202, depending on factors such as the type of engineering role, industry, and geographic location. For instance, entry-level positions may start at the lower end of the spectrum, while experienced engineers or those in specialized fields can earn significantly more. College graduates seeking employment in STEM. Graduates with degree in STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics fields, are increasingly pursuing careers that leverage their specialized skills, while a significant number of graduates majoring in STEM fields entering the workforce not all secure jobs directly related to their studies. For instance, among college graduates with a bachelor's degree in STEM, only about 14% work in STEM occupations. This indicates that many graduates find employment in non-STEM fields, such as management, education, or social sciences, despite their technical training. The demand for STEM professionals remains robust, driven by technological advancements and the need for innovation across various industries. Many STEM jobs are characterized by low unemployment rates and high salaries, making them attractive career paths. STEM employment in data science, engineering, and healthcare technology are particularly sought after. The STEM workforce is gradually becoming more diverse, with increasing representation of women and underrepresented minorities. However, disparities still exist as men continue to dominate many STEM fields. Graduates with advanced degrees in STEM fields often have better job prospects and higher earning potential. Many STEM occupations, especially in research and specialized technical roles, require or prefer candidates with master or doctoral degrees. This trend highlights the importance of further education for those seeking to advance in their careers. Employment opportunities in STEM can vary significantly by region. Certain metropolitan areas are hubs for STEM jobs, attracting a larger share of graduates. Coastal states, for example, tend to employ a higher proportion of STEM workers compared to other regions. While graduates with STEM degrees face a competitive job market, the overall outlook remains positive, with strong demand for skilled professionals. However, many graduates may find themselves in non-STEM roles, underscoring the need for targeted career support and guidance to help them navigate their employment options effectively. Specific statistics on the percentage of engineering graduates who do not want to work for companies with military contracts are not readily available. Anecdotal evidence suggests that a notable minority of engineering graduates express reluctance or outright refusal to engage in work related to military contracts. This sentiment is particularly prevalent among graduates in fields like software engineering and technology, where ethical concerns about military applications of their work are more pronounced. The reasons behind this reluctance can vary, including personal ethics, a desire to contribute to civilian projects, or a preference for industries focused on social good, such as renewable energy or healthcare technology. As awareness of ethical implications in technology and engineering grows, more graduates are likely to consider the nature of their work and its impact on society. Approximately 10% of engineering jobs in the United States are related to government military contracts. This figure reflects the significant role that defense and aerospace sector plays in the engineering job market, particularly in areas where defense contractors are concentrated, such as California, Texas, and around Washington, D.C. Approximately 25% to 50% of engineering graduates actually work in engineering-related jobs after graduation. This range reflects the reality that many graduates either pursue careers in different fields or leave the engineering profession altogether shortly after entering the workforce. While a significant number of engineering graduates do not remain in engineering roles, the degree itself provides valuable skills applicable in various career paths. So where can engineering graduates in engineering often find positions in sectors such as manufacturing, technology, and construction? Similarly, those with degrees in business frequently enter finance, marketing, and sales roles. Graduates with technical skills, particularly in computer science and information technology, are increasingly sought after in the tech industry. Roles in software development, data analysis, and cybersecurity are particularly popular and often come with competitive salaries. In government and nonprofit organizations, some graduates choose to work in government agencies or nonprofit organizations focusing on public service, community development, and social work. These positions can be fulfilling those interested in making a positive impact on society. Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now, and before Marty dives into this product review he's going to do, I want to mention this is from a company that has they've got a lot of really good products. It's got an unfortunate name. It's called Black Magic. I will tell you that that some of the folks in the audience they go to church, and we get uncomfortable with this. That doesn't detract from the fact that this is a product that I've seen used in churches I've seen this. They are top notch as far as video editing, as far as their various cameras and their HDMI senders and stuff like that. It is really good stuff. But that having been said, Marty, take it away. Let's talk about this.
But yeah, I mean. They have a lot of stuff for professional video, and I respect it, and they're all over the place if you're in that realm.
Yeah.
Well, some of our recent coverage, and this pushes the envelope for some of you, but I think you're going to get there. For others, it's just in time. We've been talking about 4K cameras and 4K projectors.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And many times, instead of HDMI, using coaxial SDI connections.
Yes, now, yes.
Right? Your pocket multimeter will not help very much when it's time to troubleshoot those installations or signal issues.
Mm-hmm.
So we reached out to Blackmagic Design. They're wizards in this realm. They sent their SmartScope Duo 4K with dual 8-inch displays.
Okay.
It supports SDI 6G monitors, and that is very high speed, high bandwidth.
Yeah.
They can show you the video image, the distribution of colors. That's called a vector scope.
Mm-hmm.
The distribution of brightness, and that's called a histogram.
Yeah, yeah.
The signal waveform and audio scope and...
And apparently you get emails too, don't you? That's okay.
Now, the signal waveform,
yeah,
and audio scope and more. For those of you who work in TV commercial studios, houses of worship, the video corporate studios, and so on, across all those facilities where video is normally shared over SDI connections, this is a shortcut to confirming what's right and more quickly tracking down what isn't. So in the economy of those facilities, the $885 price of this Duoscope is a bargain. I can't wait for them to have a 12G version.
I will tell you, yeah, a lot of this stuff that they're dealing with is, so they're dealing with broadcast quality, and they're in broadcast studios. But you're right, they're priced at a point where their hardware can go into, as you mentioned, a house of worship, and I've seen it many times there. And this is, the world has kind of shifted. Before we encountered COVID, the idea of most churches putting video up, broadcasting their sermons and stuff like that.
At most, it was a camcorder at a wedding back then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was running VHSC or something like that. This is 20 years old. All of a sudden, a lot of churches are diving into that world because, well, everybody did. And we no longer have to worry about, spending HVAC for the next, 6 months. We don't have to cool down or heat the sanctuary. Let's put that money into reaching lost souls.
And at the same time, a lot of parishioners came to do their contributions online.
Which
kept the community going and kept the community together and kept them healthier.
Yes, yes, very much so. So there's Blackmagic Design. They have one of the best video editors out there.
Oh yes.
And they offer that up for free. Now you almost need not a degree in it, but you need a lot of time to learn it. It is not by any means the easy one that's built into Windows or the Mac.
I've had to run hardware switchers since the old days.
So oh yes, yeah, yeah.
I welcome the changes.
Yeah, I went to college for radio and television broadcasting, as you know, and one of the things that we were dealing with, like, all of these different pieces of hardware, and the ability today to bring that down to our desktop computers. And for everybody to do this is amazing. And
I'll tell you what else. Yeah. What I miss, those old RCA vacuum tube switcher faders.
Okay. Yeah.
because you didn't need a separate coffee cup warmer.
No, no, not at all. Those vacuum tubes did heat up. And then you'd have to...
The first solid-state switcher fader I ever worked on was a Grass Valley, and I invite you to work them to look them up, because they started ahead of everybody else, and they're still offering an amazing catalog of stuff. If you care about that stuff, you may not be a control room nerd like Ben and I are, but yeah. It's cool tech.
Yeah, very cool tech. All right, so that was the what was that again? The Blackmagic.
Blackmagic Design, their Ultra HD SmartScope Duo.
Very cool. So troubleshooting all of the different video that before it heads on out to whoever's watching.
Well, you get to see. I mean, if you use one of the two scopes to see the video, you can see what's going wrong with it. Then you can use the other to trace that down to lost sync or no signal, or who's stepping on the cable. You know, it's
exactly. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer Club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. Tech Ed Connect. Tuesday, September the 3rd. Meeting time is 7 p.m. In-person general meetings are back. Scarsdale Public Library, 54 Olmsted Road, Scarsdale, New York. Zip code 10583. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. WPCUG.org. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, September the 6th. Meeting time is 8 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. Kingspike Computer Club meets Tuesday, September the 10th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. and they meet at the Park Plaza Restaurant, 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn. For more information, the phone number is 347-278-7320. The New York Amateur Computer Club meets Thursday, September the 12th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. And the website is nyacc.org. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, September the 13th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. And the website is limac.org. The Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, September the 26th. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m. Online virtual meeting. And the website is bcug.com. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.